Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call Frankel first, 214 or 817-333-3333. With Frankel and Frankel, there's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel and Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas.
Kansas State rushes five, back throwing to the end zone, and it's caught for a touchdown. Dominic Overbeek, able to haul it in.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. It's time for the Tuesday tailgate, so we bring in college football expert, perhaps media rights expert for the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce wedding. It is Carter Freeman. Carter Freeman, welcome. And where can people hear you outside of this?
Well, you can actually hear me this Saturday from 9 to 1 on these airwaves. Myself, Jake Rietma, and Brendan Baxter, one of our new part-time hosts, will be hosting the first show of our college football show called Fan University. We'll be up at Nebraska Furniture Mart in Grandscape at the Colony.
Hey, that's 9 to what 1. We would always do.
Come see us. We'll be talking college football, talking to guests, previewing all the big games of the day. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Is that going to be at the Tom Osborne Way?
Yeah. So you go off of Tom Osborne Boulevard.
That's right.
You go straight down what used to be called Lawrence Phillips Way. They had to change it.
Rex Burkhead Circle is what it is now.
There are obviously some reasons.
Johnny Rogers Place somewhere up there, too.
Exactly. Yeah. To the state of Nebraska Furniture Mart.
Come out and see us.
Now, speaking of Nebraska, we had Farmageddon, which I assume there's lots of farms in Nebraska. It was Iowa State and Kansas State. Did you like Iowa State over Kansas State going into Farmageddon? And how did you think, I know we've only played just kind of there, but how did you think the conference stacked up before the season started?
So I've been high on Baylor pretty much the whole offseason. I thought they were going to win the Big 12, and I still think that. And the game on Saturday did nothing to sway my opinion of that. I thought Kansas State would win this game. I thought they had a better roster, and I liked Avery Johnson, their quarterback, more than I liked Rocco Becht. And clearly that did not end up being the case on Saturday. But given that the game was in the rain, overseas, yeah, I wonder how much you're going to end up taking from this, because I am interested to see both these teams play, you know, once they get back here. But give credit to Iowa State in this game. When they had the chance to just win it at the end instead of kicking a field goal and giving the ball back to Kansas State, Matt Campbell decided, no, we're going to run this play on fourth and one or whatever it was, and we're just going to go ahead and win the game, and they did.
Now, over the last couple of years, Nate Bargatze has done the really funny George Washington sketches.
Good bit, man.
And I like this from College Football Home. I wanted to get your general thoughts, but first we got to do the comedic setup. We should build enormous stadiums on college campuses. And should these colleges play their games there? No, they will play them hundreds of miles away in smaller capacity dome stadiums called neutral site games. How do you feel about the concept, whether it's international or not, of the neutral site game?
I think in week zero, it's okay, because when, as college football has moved more towards something that embraces the weirdness of the sport, I think in week zero, it's perfectly fine. But to have Tennessee and Syracuse play in Georgia,
right,
that doesn't make any sense, because that's where their week one game is. It's at where the Falcons play in Atlanta. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I know in years past, too, we've had like Michigan State play Penn State at Ford Field in Detroit. Those kind of things I don't like. The neutral site games are OU Texas, Florida, Georgia, and wherever Army Navy is being played. But I am much more of a fan of these games being on campus. And as you saw in the playoff last year, everybody seemed to like them. Even though the game stunk, the on-campus games, when they were really big matchups,
yeah,
people love that.
What do you think about the SEC moving to the 9-game conference schedule? And then to boot, you have to play a non-conference Power 4 non-conference game starting next year.
I like it. And I think this will lead a little into something I assume we're going to talk about in a bit, college football commissioner.
Yes.
I think this move by the SEC will kind of push that off. That idea of having one voice over all of college football we'll push that a little further down the road because now the SEC matches the Big Ten in the amount of conference games they play, the Big 12, and the ACC. Somehow, I know you guys talked with Brett McMurphy yesterday about how the math is going to work.
Right.
Somehow they will follow suit. And because of that, I think the conferences will come to some sort of agreement on the 16-team playoff that will be amenable to everybody.
All right.
So in terms of that, like, and I like the SEC moving to this. And plus, you should just want to play other big teams anyway. You should want to prove yourself that you're good enough to go beat whoever on any given day, SEC schedule or not.
But don't you think the art of the college football schedule construction, I know this is not what you said, for years has been, how can I at times play the minimum that will still be good enough to cruise me into where I want to be?
Yeah, it has for sure. And because of the 8-game schedule, you were always allowed to fit in your Tennessee State or
right.
your, you know, Alabama Southern, whoever it may be, some point in the schedule. But the SEC is setting itself up so there is going to be no debate on their scheduling process because they're pretty much every team is going to play 10, you know, power conference teams. You can't debate against that when I know Kurt Cignetti at Indiana is jabbing at the SEC and how they schedule all these easy teams. Well, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah. And this comes along with, I don't think it's going to be the Big Ten idea of 28 team playoff or whatever.
We could be here for an hour talking about how bad of an idea that is.
But it does feel like maybe some of these concessions have been made with an eye on the future in the 16-team playoff, do you feel like?
Yes, for sure. That's what I'm saying. Since every Power Four conference will play 9 conference games, you can't really argue, oh, well, they get benefit because they only play 8 and they play Kent State instead of, you know, Oregon, right?
Right.
Like, there's much more balance scheduling-wise.
Now, I know you just threw it out there that perhaps this can push off the idea of the all-seeing, all-knowing, all-powerful NCAA football commissioner. But given how much the landscape has changed, do you feel like the NCAA dropped the ball by retroactively not having one of those in place that could really do anything? And do you see it in the future?
I don't think anybody the NCAA would have put in charge would have been able to do anything.
Okay.
Because the conferences are so powerful on their own. And pretty much ever since they started to negotiate their own media rights deals in the 80s, they've grown and grown and grown in power to the point where the NCAA can only do so much. So I don't think whoever they would have put in charge would have really been able to do more. I don't subscribe to that theory. But if we do end up having one, it's got to be Josh Pate, right? Who was on with Sean and RJ this morning. He's been saying, let me be that.
Your vote this morning?
Josh Pate's great. Yes, he won it before, and he convinced me again this morning that he would be excellent in that.
Okay, now I'm going to play a highlight. I know this team won, but go ahead and give me cut number 11. It feels like this was still a disappointing weekend for UNLV.
From the pistol, Calandria hands it off to Thomas up the middle. He's got some space at the 30. He's all alone at the 15, the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Scarlet and Gray. Jet Thomas from 29 yards out gets the scoring started for UNLV in 2025.
UNLV is rocking with a 2-quarterback setup. They had gotten some votes in the AP poll, and then they find themselves drug into a dogfight against Idaho State. This feels like maybe not the most awe-inspiring effort to kick off the season.
No, and their UNLV, like you said, they got votes in the polls.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They have expectations to reappear in the Mountain West title game as they did last year. And if you look up and down UNLV's roster, you'll recognize a lot of like former 5-4 stars from other programs like JoJo Earl from Alabama or Anthony Calandria was at Virginia in the last couple years. But Idaho State hasn't had a winning record at the FCS level since 2018. So the fact that they were up 14-0 or 17-0 to begin this game was, it got me and my friends to turn the game on because I think there were only some other FCS on FCS games going on. So we watched a lot of this game, and they ended up coming back and winning, but Idaho State, I think, was a 35-point underdog going into this game. And the fact that it was this close, yeah, I would start to look at maybe some of the other teams in the Mountain West, like San Jose State, or some of the, like, you know, teams who were picked to finish lower than UNLV, maybe they'll be have a little better chance to face Boise State, who I still think is going to play for a Mountain West title this year later down the line.
Corey, did you find yourself locked in on the UC Davis-Mercer game?
That wasn't the first one I wanted to watch, but it was a good one.
Well, good news that you didn't see it all the way through, Corey, because neither did the teams, and it never happened.
That's what I thought.
So UC Davis, number 7 in the football championship subdivision, because we can't call it a different division, and number was leading number 11 Mercer with 7:46 to go. They were up 23-17. There was a lot of issues with the weather, and the game was eventually ruled a no contest due to torrential rain, which means not only did neither team win or lose, they wiped out all of the stats. If you're a college football player who's having a particularly good day, are you upset that also all your stats got wiped out?
Absolutely. That's like when you're playing Call of Duty and you're in the middle of a game and you got 19 kills already, and then all of a sudden you get the blue screen of death, you know?
Oh.
And you're just like, oh no, I was gonna break my personal record. And now nobody's ever gonna know. Your kids will never know.
Especially it was a top 11 matchup too at that level.
Yes.
Like that's a ranked matchup that you think could have some implications for how the FCS playoffs will work out in a couple months, but just gone. But on the subject of FCS ranked teams that played on Saturday, Incarnate Word, you know, Texas school, they lost to Nicholls State. They were number 4 in the FCS poll, and they lost their first game of the season.
Now, we're talking about ranked matchups. I understand all of the reasons so much focus has been hitting on Texas and Ohio State, but 6 of the top 10 teams are playing each other this weekend.
Yeah.
Can you give us a perhaps quick-ish hit on those 3 top 10 matchups?
Okay, so Texas, Ohio State, I feel like we've talked it to death, but it's going to be an awesome game. Texas is an underdog in this game. They're the first number 1 team to be an underdog in their first game in like forever, maybe ever, but I would expect them to go in and win that game. If you're betting, I would pick Texas plus 1.5, 2.5, whatever the line might be. Then the night game is the one I'm really excited for, which is LSU at Clemson. That's the battle of the Tigers of Death Valley. It's 2 Heisman contenders and Garrett Nussmeier for LSU and Cade Klubnik for Clemson.
Sorry, do you root against Dabo Swinney?
At this point, they've been such a nothing burger and for so many years, and Sweeney's finally kind of embraced the portal. He was the lone holdout outside of the service academies but he's finally given into it. They brought in a couple this year, and plus the way they've organically built their roster up in the age of the transfer portal, he's a bit of a dinosaur, but it's turned into a good dinosaur, I guess, like the Pixar movie, right?
Yeah.
So I don't dislike them as much as I used to, but I am picking LSU to win that game. I'm going to regret it because Brian Kelly has never won his first game of a season at LSU since he's been there. He's 0-3, lost to Florida State twice and then to USC last year, but I'm really high on LSU this year, so that game's going to be awesome. And then on Sunday, it's Notre Dame and Miami, which Notre Dame's breaking in a new quarterback. Miami's bringing in Carson Beck from Georgia. I think
underperformed last year.
I think this is going to be a game of underperformances. Like, no, because Notre Dame bringing in a new quarterback, I think Notre Dame's going to win, but they're going to have some kinks to work out with a guy making his first career start. And then Carson Beck in Miami, I just think they're overrated. I don't think they're a top 10 kind of team. They do have home field in this game, but Notre Dame's a 2.5 point favorite on the road. That tells you anything.
We didn't get to talk about this at the end of last week. What do you guys think about Arkansas allowing field rushing, but after a 3-minute delay so they don't get any fines?
So they can clear the players and stuff?
Yeah, and we'll also...
They're not clearing the players in 3 minutes, if that's their thought process.
I think Arkansas is more concerned with the stringent SEC fine schedule for rushing the field. It does feel like it could help with safety, but what do we think about this one?
You're not preventing 20,000, however many... there's not that many students in the stands, but you're not preventing thousands of students from rushing the field as soon as the clock hits zero. If they beat I don't know who Arkansas is playing at home this year. If they beat a top 10 team, if they beat LSU or, you know, someone they hate, if they beat Texas, because I know they play Texas. No, that's in Austin. Whatever. You're not stopping them from rushing the field.
I disagree. Here's the deal. Rushing the field is a spontaneous feeling, right? Like, that's something that we just did this, especially if it's like a late game win. Like, that's definitely difficult. But if all the people know, 3 minutes after the game, the buzzer, we get to rush the field. If I'm Arkansas, I put a new clock up as soon as the game's over.
You sell that. And everybody, you have a sponsor on it. You make more money
for
Arkansas.
And then everybody count down to when they can rush the field. Now, it takes away from the spontaneity of it all, but it does allow for everybody to be on a certain time.
I kind
of
like it.
I see the vision.
Oh, I kind of like it. Now, real quick, true freshman Bryce Underwood going to start at Michigan at quarterback. How do you feel about the player? How do we feel about Michigan?
No one's seen a freshman like him.
I mean, keep in mind, Derek Holland also might be listening, so don't hurt his feelings.
Well, his Wolverines are going to lose in week two to my Sooners. If you can see my shirt here on the fan cam, I am wearing my Oklahoma shirt today.
Do you really think that?
I do.
Okay.
I do think Oklahoma will win because it's at Norman. If the game was in Michigan, I think it'd be a lot different. But bringing a true freshman in a second career start in an environment like that, Michigan wins that game, I'm going to buy into them a lot more, but I think Michigan, even with Bryce Underwood at quarterback, who was the number one overall recruit in this last class, they flipped him from LSU, paying him $10 million over the course of his time at Michigan to play quarterback. They're part of that second tier of Big Ten teams. Like, I think Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon are going to be very good. Everyone else behind that, it's a bit of a crapshoot. So if they do go into Norman and show me something against the top 20 team,
sure,
I might buy into them a little more. But right now I'm kind of like, I think OU's done enough in the offseason to beat them, especially at home.
As always, we appreciate the info. Can you tell everybody one more time where they can hear you this weekend?
Yeah, so Fan University this Saturday from 9 to 1 on these airwaves. It will be me, Jake Rietma, and Brendan Baxter. We're going to be live at Nebraska Furniture Mart up in the Grandscape in the Colony if you want to come say hi. But we'll be talking all the big games, Texas, Ohio State, all the other stuff we've talked about today. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And then Colorado has named Caden Salter as their starting quarterback for the opener. Another bit of news right there. Thank you very much, Carter.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.